Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is AJ Jacobs. AJ is the author of 4 New York Times bestsellers, including The Year of Living Biblically and The Know-It-All. CBS will be airing a sitcom based on The Year of Living Biblically this winter. He is a contributor to Esquire and NPR. Hey, AJ, how are you?
Hey, Mark. I am good. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, it's been a little while, but Kevin and I, as you know, are huge fans of everything you do, so what a treat to be able to talk to you.
Yeah, yeah, right back at
and
you.
And I think of you every morning, AJ.
Really?
Yes.
Why is that?
When I'm putting on my shoes and my elastic bands, I say, thank AJ, thank AJ.
I still have them myself. Aren't they the best?
Right. These were a cool tool of yore, and he convinced me to swipe out my traditional string, you know, shoelaces, which have been around for hundreds of years, for these mini bungee cords, and they're just the cat's pajamas.
I will never tie a string again unless I go sailing or something. Well, that is great. I hope you like my new tools as much. I hope you like them, find them as useful.
Sure. So tell us about them.
I'm very excited about them because I feel like I'm spreading the word, spreading the gospel. So the first one is an ice bandana. And
bandana for ice. Okay.
It's basically, you wrap it around your neck and it's a little scarf, that has ice in it, refreezable ice. And what I wear it all summer long because we all know what lots of people wear scarves in the winter and no one thinks twice. But very few seem to wear these cooling scarves in the summer. But they are just as comfortable and just as helpful. And what I do is I just put it in the freezer overnight. And then it's this little black band. I tie it around my neck during the day, and it lasts a good 4 or 5 hours. You can switch them out. And it's like a little air conditioner for my neck. It just cools my whole body down.
I'm speechless.
Well, here's the thing. My kids do walk 5 feet in front of me. Because they're like, why does Dad have that weird thing around his neck? So that is my only request. If there are any makers or designers out there who can make a fashionable, like a cool-looking neck cooler, I think that would help. Because if I owned that company, here's how I would pitch it. Like, it could save the world. Because I don't use my AC as much, if at all.
That's so cool.
I sit at my desk and, the AC is sucking up huge amounts of energy.
So is the idea that cooling your neck is equivalent to cooling your body? I mean, like in China, the big thing, the way you're cool is you have to expose your belly. Mm. You know, if you've seen these guys in Singapore or whatever, is they always roll up their shirt so that their belly is exposed. And it's like, if their belly is exposed, then they're cool.
That is funny.
And so you're saying, well, it doesn't matter the rest of my body. As long as my neck is cool, then I'm going to feel cool?
It really does. For me, at least, that's the way my body works.
Haven't tried the belly thing. You should try that.
I think that's a good one. And I would put a little ice pack on the belly, too. No problem with that.
This is cool, though. Clothes traditionally are, if you're cold, you can always put on more clothes. But if you're hot, there has never been something you could put on to cool you off. So this is like a very cool idea.
It is time. It is time for the cooling scarf. And I did look up before the show, I wanted to get some science to see, is the neck a particularly sensitive part of the body for cooling and heating? I didn't have time to Google it enough. But my anecdotal evidence from my own data set of 1 is that it is very effective.
That's great. $18. And like you said, it's not the most beautiful thing in the world, but it sounds functional.
And I guess my other question would be, there is probably more than one make. Is this particular Icy Cools or the whatever the brand is this better than your normal ice scarf?
Yeah, this one is called Thermafreeze. And you know what? I have not done a test, but I encourage other people to, because they're not that expensive. You know, this one, I see ones for like $12, $10. And again, I really looked hard and I did not see anything that was not embarrassing to wear. But I say, so hopefully they're going to fix that and come up with a really cool looking one. But in the meantime, I am willing to be slightly embarrassed and slightly embarrass my kids to save the earth.
And one other thing is once you have put it on, how long does the cooling last? And do you have to have like three or four others in the freezer that you can swap out during the day as it goes on?
I do, actually. I have four of these and I swap them out, but they last a good 5 hours. It's not bad. Just two, I think two a day will do you.
That's really good.
I hope someone uses, and they don't look that bad. I mean, take a look. If you do the black one, it just looks like, you know, you've got a bandana around your neck.
They're okay. Right. Somebody needs to Kickstarter a fashionable one.
It's a great idea. I love that.
Right. Yeah. It's 100 degrees out and you have a scarf on and people are kind of like, no wonder you feel hot. Yeah.
So next you have a pair of earmuffs that don't really look like earmuffs.
Yes, exactly. These are, well, I think last time I was on, I talked about these great earplugs that I like, Sonic Defenders, that are designed for the military. So this is kind of in the same area. And it came about because when I was doing my book on trying to be the healthiest person alive, I read all of these studies about how noise is actually a health hazard. It's sort of an underreported, undervalued health hazard, and that it can raise your stress level. So I have become more aware of trying to cut down noise in my life. And they sort of look like Beats by Dre. Not quite as cool, but they don't have any music capabilities. They're just like the earmuffs that they wear on the tarmacs of airports, but they're smaller and sleeker looking. And I love them. I wear them all. I'm wearing them right now. I wear them while I work. I wear them around the house. And I'd say it's like they turn the volume down from 10 to 5. It's 31 decibels of noise reduction. And again, they are, my kids sometimes are embarrassed, but they are, they are much better than, you know, those huge, massive tarmac deals. And also, I used to wear the Bose noise-canceling headphones, which are great, but they cost $300. And I kept losing them. These are $12. So I bought two Boses. And then after losing the second one, I was like, I can't do this. So these are $12. I can lose as many as I want and not feel too guilty.
And how do they, in their decibel reduction, how do they compare it to the Bose noise canceling? How much noise canceling does the Bose claim to reduce?
Well, they are almost as good as the Bose. Bose is slightly better, but Bose, their shtick is that they will take out like the noise of the airplane as it's buzzing, but you can still hear conversation very clearly. But what if you don't want to hear the conversation? That's what I work in a little shared office space. I don't want to hear the conversation. So these actually I find more useful.
Mm-hmm. I think you have a new. I think you have a new job as a fashion consultant because you've got these earmuffs. You've got the scarf. You've got the bungee ties. I think there's a whole new style. the normcore plus.
That is true. You have to be a little bit okay with getting looks as you walk down the hall. Yeah.
So you wear the muffs and the neck scarf at the same time?
I do. I have been known to do so. I'm afraid so. Yeah. But listen, makes
my
life better.
You're biohacking.
There you go. That's it.
You gotta do it.
You just tell your kids, I'm just biohacking. I'm way ahead of the curve here.
Yeah, they're the ones who should be embarrassed.
I got to use that line on my kids, too.
So you're all about comfort, AJ. I can tell.
I am all about comfort. I got to say, yeah. And I didn't include this, but my wife found me an amazing shirt that it looks like a dress shirt, but it feels like a sweatshirt. And I can get you the make in the show notes. But yeah, that's basically my dream, is to be as comfortable as possible without being thrown out of public places.
So on the theme of maximum comfort, you have another suggestion here that will keep your crotch cool.
It's true. I do definitely. I do like working with my laptop on my bed, even though I'm not sure it's the most efficient because you tend to fall asleep. But it is enjoyable. But I do suffer from overheated crotch syndrome when I do that. So there are several of these brands. I have one, but I'm sure the others are good too. These adjustable laptop trays that have these legs, they sort of look like the AT-AT from Star Wars attached to a tray, so you can adjust the legs and they even have fans, which I don't bother with, but they've got little built-in fans to keep it cooler. But I found that does increase my productivity when I'm working on my bed, because then I'm not quite as distracted.
So are you sitting on your bed with this, or are you laying down, your legs out?
No, I am sitting, like with a pillow and the legs spread out, and then the tray. Do you guys ever work on the bed, or are you mostly desk bound?
I've never worked on the bed in my life. Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm mostly desk too, but at the airport, I'll do it on my lap.
Interesting.
I'm a standing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Too. Well, that's it. I mean, I also have the treadmill desk, so I work there. But okay. Never. That's interesting. So, because that is what the a lot of health experts say. You know, bed is only for sleep and sex. So I am breaking some rules there. But
you're into comfort, and on a bed it's comfortable, and
there.
So yeah, I get that. That's maximizing comfort.
Thank you.
That's kind of cool. I like the way you can put it. I'm seeing this guy on a couch doing it, which looks pretty good.
Oh yeah.
If you have it on a desk though, you need to have a separate keyboard, right? I mean, otherwise your hands are like up at your chin level.
Oh, interesting. Well, it depends whether it's a desktop or a laptop. I only use a laptop. You guys use desktops?
No, I have a laptop that I travel with, but I know what Mark is saying. I guess maybe this is resting at the height of maybe a few inches above your torso then, right?
And it's on the desk.
Right.
Oh, it's on a desk.
Yeah.
No, I meant when it's on the bed. You're just using it on the bed, right?
Right. If you use it on the desk, then it's basically a standing desk. You can use it
Gotcha.
Second use.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the hinges, it's kind of hinged. It's not wobbly or anything?
No, you can make it because it's the legs, it's sort of got a when it rests on the whole leg as opposed to the tip points.
Right.
So for whatever reason, the link I'm looking at here on Amazon shows as a five count, so you can buy five of these.
I see just that.
In case, or maybe you're traveling, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going back to the question of there are a number of varieties of brands of this. Do you prefer the one that you mentioned for any
I
reason?
have only, if I had seen the cheaper ones, I would have bought those, but I didn't do my research properly. So I bought one that was a little expensive, $50. Yeah, I can't recommend the others from personal experience, but they seem to, they look like they do the job.
And I'm just wondering what we call these. We call these adjustable laptop tables, I think, or
Is
something.
that the official name?
Well, I'm making one up.
I like that. Yeah. Adjustable lap.
Adjustable laptop
I mean,
desk
mini
or
desks, you could
something.
even say, because they
Yeah.
are like a little mini desk.
Okay.
Amazon is calling it camping furniture.
Really?
That's where it's classified under.
That's interesting. I am not a camper, but I suppose it might work there too.
I could see where it could come in handy for that. Sure.
I think is it collapsible enough to fit into luggage? Would you ever travel with one of these?
I have traveled with it. Yeah, it basically collapses to the size of a TV dinner tray, for anyone who remembers those.
Okay.
And then you can, take the legs out.
All right. Well, for those who do like to work in bed, this seems like a fantastic solution.
I like it. I recommend it.
Do you watch movies on this rig?
I have watched movies on this rig, yes. And this is one of my cool tools that might be a little controversial, and might be sort of blasphemy from for some film lovers and filmmakers. So please forgive me. But to save time, I like to watch movies on double speed. I like to listen to cool tools on double speed. I hope you're not offended. I enjoy it just as much.
No.
I get twice as many cool tools in an hour.
Right.
But if you go on YouTube Red, if you join for like $10 a month, you can download movies and then go to the little gear icon in the corner and put it at double speed. And you can understand everything. It doesn't go to chipmunk voice. It just they speak very quickly. And I watched Manchester by the Sea on double speed the other night, and it was slow on double speed. So I don't know how my wife sat in the theater and watched it in real speed.
So the little gear on YouTube works whether you have YouTube Red or not. It will work on any YouTube, by the way. If you go down into a YouTube video and just go down to the gears, you can speed it up
Oh.
at the 1.5 or 2.
That's
Yeah,
great.
well that yes. So I do watch just regular YouTube videos on double speed, but if you want to watch a movie, my understanding is you have to go to, I could be wrong, but you have to like download it. You have to rent it or for $3.
So tell us about YouTube Red, as just a general service, whether or not it's double speed or not. What are you finding on YouTube Red, that you can't get other places?
I think the only advantage, as far as I can tell, is that they cut out the commercials. So I never get to see, I never have to watch a.
Well, that's like when that's
It
Netflix, though,
is.
right?
Oh yeah, it's the same. It's like Hulu Plus, it's the whole thing. And I will say what might have driven me to it is sometimes I like to watch trailers for movies, and you have to watch a commercial before a commercial for a movie. I found that very irritating. So I'm like, all right, for the amount of annoyance this is causing me, I will pay $10.
So are you, is there the similar spectrum of movies and TV stuff on YouTube Red as compared to, say, Netflix or Hulu?
I have never found a movie that I couldn't download. I think that, I mean, because they do make you pay extra, so you're paying $3 extra for to rent it. But
On
they have,
YouTube Red, you mean?
right, in addition to the Red, you still have to rent to download a movie.
I
You don't
see.
have to rent regular videos, but you do have to rent. So I do pay that extra $3 so I can watch it in double speed.
My kids wanted to watch Donnie Darko, and the only place, I don't know why this is, the only place they could find it were YouTube Red subscribers was on was on YouTube, so we paid like $3 for it, and they watched it. But it wasn't on like Netflix or Apple Movies or any of the other services.
How did they like Donnie Darko?
They loved it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How old are they again?
One of my daughters is 20 and the other one is 14.
All right. Yeah. I don't think mine are quite ready for it.
Okay. Yeah. It'll be a little while maybe.
Yeah.
So, anyway, one of the things you're saying is that in your search for double speedness, YouTube Red seems to be the only place that allows you to watch a movie at double speed. That's interesting.
I think so. Maybe we need some fact checkers there. Maybe you can do it on regular YouTube.
You can't do it on regular YouTube for sure. But I guess I never thought about whether you could do it on Netflix or Hulu.
Oh, yeah. I have searched on all of those, and no, I do not see a double speed button. Okay. I would love it. I went on a podcast yesterday. A friend of mine is starting a podcast where you talk about movies. And we talked about A Clockwork Orange, and I watched that on double speed. That was a problem because there is a fast forward scene in A Clockwork Orange. Fast forwarding was, that was confusing.
When he meets the girls in the record store,
right? A very disturbing scene, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And by the way, just to our listeners, you have to work up to double speed. Don't try and make that in a single hop. I don't know if you found that, but you know, it's like for some people, like you know, 1.25 is a good step, and then 1.5. I'd work
that
up to it.
That is a good idea. But, yeah, it did take me a while, and also it takes you a while, especially if you're listening to a podcast where the people are talking quickly. I find this sort of like Shakespeare. For the first 10 minutes of the Shakespeare play, I have no idea what's going on. But then something in my brain kicks in and I'm like, oh, okay, this sort of makes sense.
Yeah, that happens with like old books too. If you read a book written in the 1800s, it's like it takes a while for it to start to become comprehensible. And then after a while, it's just fine. Your brain becomes normal.
I like that.
Right. It's a different language. Yeah. It's kind of like bilingualism. Huh. So, anyway, that's a great suggestion. I didn't know about the double speed, which I've watched YouTube tutorials. That's kind of a common speed, but I had not yet tried a movie. So that's a new experience I'd like to try.
So AJ, you had a couple of other tools, but we can save that for the next time. Let's talk about your new book that's out. It came out on November 7th. We're recording this a little bit before that, but by the time this is out, your book will be just freshly available. It's called It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. What's it about?
Well, it is about these wild revolutions that are happening in every part of family, in the way we conceive family and connect to family. There are people who are building a world family tree. So it's like the Genome Project or... They're like colonizing Mars. It's this massive project where they're trying to connect every human being on Earth into one tree. And I'm on it. I forgot to check before this podcast whether you guys are on it. I think you probably are. But it's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You can figure out how you're linked to anyone on Earth. Barack Obama, for instance, he's my fifth great aunt's husband's brother's wife, seventh great nephew. So we're quite close. And then there's the DNA angle, which is revolutionizing family, so we can see how we're connected that way. And actually, it relates to a cool tool, which is these services that do these massive family trees. They're sort of like Wikipedia for your family, and there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of people working on the same tree and linking each other. So one is called genie.com, G-E-N-I.com. Another is wikitree.com. So those are cool tools, even if you don't do the DNA test.
So if I wanted to kind of jump in and all I had was just my DNA from 23andMe, could I just give them my DNA and say, show me my tree? If I don't know anything else, my parents or grandparents, or they just gave me DNA, would that work?
It would work to some extent. I think it depends a little on your DNA and whether you have any records. But if you have no records and just the DNA, They have, yes, they both have ways of integrating the DNA into the world family tree. And yeah, I think they're both pretty strong on that. But just send a note if you go to like the little help section and send a note and say that. Because I'd love, what is, so you don't have a lot aside from your DNA,
Right, I have almost zero interest in my ancestors for some reason. I know it's just something that I don't really care very much about, but I do have my DNA sequenced for, I was interested in kind of like the health reasons, so I could supply that. I'm sure there are relatives who have done work on our genealogy, but I've always ignored them, so I don't have that. It's just that I understand that. I mean, reading your book, which I've had the pleasure to do, even though it hasn't come out yet, I was just completely fascinated by the fact that you that there every I guess you and everybody else has these amazing ancestors who have these weird, fantastic stories. Every single one of them seems to be a story that we kind of don't know. And actually, I found the stories of your ancestors to be sufficient. I don't really need to read about mine. I think yours are probably going to be funnier in many ways.
Yeah, we probably share ancestors, so you don't have to worry. But yeah, we all have so many ancestors that if you are able to do just a little, you have thousands of seventh great grandparents. So some of them are going to be colorful, some are going to be, criminals, and some are going to be nobles. But we have so many that you can sort of pick and choose who to concentrate on.
AJ, I just wanted to ask you quickly. You did some work with these tests where you do a saliva swab and they send it in and they tell you kind of like your ancestry. We've had such weird results when our family has done it. Like,
Really?
like my wife, Carla, came in as being like, I don't know, 6% something Ashkenazi Jewish.
Hey, welcome to the tribe.
But then neither of my kids show that. And one of my kids has like 2% Sephardic Jewish, but neither of us had any Sephardic
Yeah,
in us.
well,
So.
all I can say, I know, by the way, my wife works for 23andMe. So anything below like 5% is basically statistical noise.
Okay.
That's good
Right.
to know.
Right. So when you get down to like below 5%, these are all just probabilities anyway, and it's you have to treat it almost as if it's noise, meaning that it doesn't mean that it's not there. It just means that it's has a very low certitude and very low reliability. So that's why you're seeing it. So if it's less than 5%, you should just say, well, they don't really know.
Okay. The shocker was like I'm 20% Italian. I had no idea. And my wife was like 20% Greek, and she was like shocked.
You guys are from ancient civilizations. That's fun. Well, I will say, yeah, the good news is they're getting more and more accurate because part of the way that they are able to assess where you're from is by comparing it with other people in the database. So the more people they get, hopefully the more accurate it'll be. They've told me that, the sort of the bigger, if they say you're from North Africa or the Far East, that is pretty accurate. If you try to get really granular, like your ancestors were from Thailand or Sweden, that's when it kind of breaks down at this point. And a few years ago, I did one which told me I was 14% Scandinavian, and I was psyched because I thought I was 100% Jewish. I was like, I'm going to go cross country skiing. This will be great. And then it turned out to be a statistical error. So I'm
Interesting.
down to like 2%, if that, of Scandinavian.
Yeah. And while there are tons of stories and amazing tales of our ancestors, the point of your book that I've taken is that there's a more profound idea that we are all related and not that distantly either, that we have a lot more in common, and that should be kind of a source for a perspective, a worldview, that we look at each other in this related way. And I think people will really enjoy the book because it's fun, It's silly at times, but incredibly insightful and full of lots of news. And people should read it, not just because you're a funny guy, but because this is actually a very important idea, which is that we are all deeply connected, even in the near term.
Well, that is lovely to hear. And, you know, during my research, I was looking through one of my favorite writers, Kevin Kelly, and I think it was some list of 10 mega predictions for the future. Yeah. And one of them was that as we build a family tree of the entire world, hopefully it'll encourage people to be a little more tolerant and kind to each other. So you scooped me. You were there first.
Yeah, I was hypothesizing this long ago that this would be one of the, that it will, actually, I went even further saying not just that every person alive would be connected, but every person who had ever lived.
Right.
Actually, once we got all 7 billion people connected, or 9 billion, however many you have, we would start to work backwards and try and, from the existing DNA, unravel your ancestors' DNA to actually, and using genealogical records, try to actually connect everybody who's ever lived.
Yeah, I think that it is possible. And not just that, if you go even further, Darwin himself said that all living creatures are cousins to the millionth degree. So right. The ultimate would be a family tree starting with Luca, the last universal common ancestor, this little bacteria that lived a couple billion years ago, and then coming down to us.
Right. Yeah. And that would be, once we start to sequence all the species on the planet, which we have not done, that would enable us to do that.
Yeah.
Amazing. We have so much work ahead of us.
It's true.
You've taken the great first step in making it accessible to everybody here.
Well, I loved writing it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This has been great talking to you. Your book is called It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. And if you want to find out more about the things that AJ recommended, including the wonderful ice bandana, go to cool-tools.org. Thank you, AJ.
Thank you, Mark and Kevin. I had a great time, as always.